and welcome to the Logistics Tribe podcast. I'm Boris Vergendreher, founder of the Logistics Tribe, and today's episode is hosted by Marco Prügelmeier. Marco is a real geek when it comes to technology that enables logistics operations and processes, so this episode about 5G technology, of course, is right up his alley. Better yet, his guest today is Stefan Wimmer. Stefan is managing partner at Baifu, a German company that offers independent advice and services in the area of industrial 5G radio networks. So if you want to learn about 5G and how that technology will impact logistics and supply chain, this is the right deep dive for you. I personally learned a ton from this podcast, and I hope you will too. Enjoy.
Hi, Stefan. Welcome to the Logistics Tribe. Good to have you on the show.
My pleasure, Marco. Good to hear you too. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Yeah, we wanted to have you to talk a little bit about 5G. It's in everybody's mouth and everybody's talking about it. But we would like to actually dig a little bit deeper on it. And therefore, we have a real expert here, as Boris also already mentioned in the intro. And Stefan, but I would like to start with a little bit of a historical overview. Actually, what was the development of cellular networks and what was the way actually to 5G? Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. First of all, it's really my pleasure having this podcast today, Marco. Thanks again. And well, you know, the funny thing is, Marco, that all started in 1992, yeah, with the first digital cellular network, which we better known as GSM. And actually, at this year, at that time, I started working in that business as a young man, still with hair on my head. Yeah. And I was there at T-Mobile, which was a subsidiary of Group Deutsche Telekom, and doing the frequency planning around the first digital networks. Yeah. And then it really ramped up massively. Yeah. So in 95, we had the first SMS sent out. In 97, the first prepaid was launched. And almost 10 years later, in 2000, we had the first UMTS network up and running. And this actually was the starting point for mobile internet over the air, because UMTS just provided much more bandwidth to the mobile device. UMTS, by the way, is also well known as the 3G, so the third generation of cellular networks. Already 2006, we had to break even by having 85 million mobile lines live, and which is the same as many as residents in the country of Germany, yeah. And in the same year, also 4G, better known as LTE, was getting standardized, meaning there was for the first time a worldwide uniform standard available, which brought nameable advantages for both the developers and the users, because as you might remember, when you travel to Asia or in the US, yeah, you always had to be
you had to switch
your phones and stuff like that. By launching LTE, it was just history, yeah. And that's meant by saying there was advantages for the users as well. That all happened 2006. 2010 then followed the kickoff of LTE in Germany, which brought us tremendously new capabilities in terms of data bandwidth and bringing more and more mobile internet on the user's device. 9 years later, so last year, we had the kickoff of 5G in Germany, also internationally standardized as LTE. But that's not all. Around 5G, you know, a large number of European nations agreed on a harmonized frequency band for the use of 5G. So this band is placed in between of 3.4 to 3.8 gigahertz. And this is important because manufacturers will now be able to reach a wider range of customers, you know, with one standard. And this will have positive effects on the prices, among other things. It is very important to add that in addition to the US and UK, Germany has embarked on a path that opens up new opportunities for the industry in particular. Indeed, the German regulator, so the Bundesnetzagentur, has decided that 1/4 of this spectrum will be made available to the industry so that companies can set up and operate their own private mobile network. And this was a breakthrough and brand new because this happened before in the past. And this has been absolutely recognized worldwide and has not been changed in this form. So that's saying we have a handful of countries out in the world, so like the US or UK and Germany as well, who offer the industry private spectrum for their own private networks.
But that's not for all the countries. It's only for certain countries that this is possible.
Yeah, Stefan? That's correct, because the Bundesnetzagentur. So first of all, the European Commission stated, important for us is that we get a harmonized band. But how to bring this band to the people is in charge of the national regulatory authority. And for Germany, they said, okay, our way is like that in this band. So other countries went a different way. But the good thing is, Marco, we have beside that band in between of 3.4 to 3.8, another band coming across, which is called the millimeter wave band, which takes place in the 26 gigahertz area. And as far as I follow the discussion and development on that point, is that many countries will follow that path to make millimeter wave band available to a broader audience than it was in the sub 6 gigahertz band.
Yeah? Okay.
So all in all, quite positive development. Yeah. While I'm talking, I just recognize I'm really getting older, aren't I? Because we've been.
You followed it right from the beginning, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Really from kickoff with the first digital networks. And interesting is that at the end, each decade has its own mobile technology and is still moving. Yeah. So for example, last week, I joined my first 6G summit where we talked about the first ideas around 6G, and I expect that will come around in 9-10 years from now.
And did you connect already with 5G with that summit to talk about 6G then? Okay, no, interesting, but we will come to that later, how the future will be like.
Okay.
So very interesting developments here, and to be a little bit more specific on the technical terms and issues and specifications. So what are the real differences and the advantages of 5G now over LTE, so over the fourth generation?
Oh, wow. That's indeed a huge range. I'm not sure whether this podcast should take us 3 hours or so, but I try to keep it short because, you know, 5G offers a maximum of advantages comparing to all what we have seen before. So the most prominent thing is that 5G offers several improvements in terms of data rate, coverage, and reliability. Yeah. So one of the main reason for switching to 5G is just the increasing number of smart user devices. This could be a smartphone, but also sensors, as we all know under the buzzword IoT, so Internet of Things. And the ever-growing hunger for data, those mobile devices.
So you mean on the first hand, it's about connectivity to multiple or more users than before.
Yeah, absolutely. And the data hunger. Imagine what you are doing now on a daily basis with your smartphone. Yeah. You're consuming massive data, and if I see the reports of my son, who is 14 years old, how much bandwidth he consumes on a regular day, that's really unbelievable. Never thought about it 5 years ago. Yeah, and existing LTE networks, for instance, will not longer be able to handle this increasing data traffic in population centers alone. So 5G delivers the necessary performance and set new technical standards. Compared to its forerunner, LTE, 5G is initially much faster. But the good thing is that speed is not only one advantage of 5G. The focus is particularly on the possibility of connecting many more user devices than before and prospectively in real time. Perspective.
Do you got a rough number or comparison on that, Stefan? So how many more users per cell or whatever. How is, I don't know how it is defined, but what is it? Is it a factor of twofold or tenfold? I don't know. I have no imagination on that.
So 5G is standardized in three different, as we call it, releases. Yeah, two already are done, which was release 15 and 16. In 15, we were talking about the massive data throughput. Release 16 was defined as the reliability of the network and the low latency standards. And the next one, which will be likely standardized in 2022, is taking care about the so-called massive machine type communication, MMTC. And with that, we are able to handle 100 times more user devices on the same area. So just comparing apples with apples. Yeah.
So it's not even a factor of 10, it's a factor of 100 more. Okay, that's really a huge leap. Yeah.
And also from the data throughput, because I already mentioned 5G is much faster than LTE. I mean, you know, already the jump from 3G to 4G was enormous. And today's LTE networks have an output of, let's say, 500 to 1,000 megabits per second or 1 gig. Yeah. So 5G, on the other hand, will deliver a good 1 to 3 gigabits in the first phase. Already in the first phase, because we all have to understand 5G started, but the development isn't finished at all. So we are expecting in the near future a data throughput of 10 to 20 gigabits over the air. And this would represent an improvement by a factor of 10 to 20, even measured against today's fastest LTE network. Mm-hmm. And the third massive advantage, if I can add this in a minute, is just the topic about the latency. So latency describes the time what a signal needs to be transferred from A to B. And if we're talking about real-time communication in terms of autonomous driving, yeah, for robots or cars, we need to have something lower than 5 milliseconds. Maybe 2 milliseconds. And the only technology today which is able to provide those numbers are fiber optics. So the classical fiber optic connection from A to B, this is where we see 2 to 5 milliseconds. Yeah. So with 5G and based on the standards, we will reach this not today, but in the near future. And some of the developers hope to reach 1 millisecond over the air, which is a tremendous improvement.
Oh, wow. Let me jump in here a little bit, Stefan, because what does that exactly mean? That means if you send a message to a robot on the shop floor or in logistics, yeah, that means that basically the reaction time for the robot could be as low as 1 millisecond as he reacts then to this signal, right?
That's correct. And this is all possible due to the new architecture function of a 5G network. Because we never will reach those numbers if we will handle a signal like we used to handle it the last 30, 40 years. Because every signal so far was created on the smartphone, let's say, and transported through the entire network to the other smartphone or modem. But this is not necessary. So why should I transport a signal from A to B if you are sitting directly next to me? That doesn't make sense to send a signal from Munich to Hamburg, for instance, and back. And this distance all is bad for the latency and the signal run trip time. And the 5G architecture offers a great opportunity to make a split between the control plane and the user plane. What does that mean? So control plane is responsible for the control of the network, where you say, okay, I will do the SIM card authentication. I will do the network slicing configuration, the quality of service configuration. So all the overall necessary adjustments and configurations for the network But the control plane, and this is new on 5G, we separate it from the user plane is separated from the control plane, if we want. Mm-hmm. So we can keep the control traffic, the user traffic, the data traffic on premise. And if, for example, if we step into V2X communication between two AGVs, mm-hmm. we need to have close to real-time communication. So the idea mm-hmm. is that one AGV sends the signal to another AGV without going to many different network elements. Yeah. And based on mm-hmm. this architecture, it is possible to reach close to real time communication. Yeah?
Okay. One question on that, Stefan. Does that mean that the latency is basically connected to the distance of the two users? So that if the one user is, let's say, if we are in the same cell, connected to the same cell, then we can reach a latency of 1 millisecond. But if the one is in South Africa and the other one is in Germany, then you would have more latency. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. And this is simple physics, you know?
Yeah.
We
can't change that.
Well, we cannot trick Albert Einstein. Yeah, that's not possible. Yeah? Sorry.
All right. Okay. So, and on the latency part, is there any, what is the latency of LTE? So just to compare it a little bit, is this also in the 50 milliseconds range or 100 milliseconds?
LTE in a nutshell, you can count somewhere in between of 10 to 50 milliseconds, 10 mm-hmm. to 50 mm-hmm. milliseconds. We did some with my company. Baifu, we did some proof of concept, for instance, together also with BMW, and we measured the latency times based on LTE, and we reached really solid 16 up to 20 milliseconds. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which is great in either way, but unfortunately not sufficient for doing real-time communication.
Okay.
So, that's very impressive. So we are on a 100-fold increase of 5G in terms of devices connected for one cell.
Yeah.
We are in a 10 to 20-fold increase of throughput.
Correct.
And we are in a 10 to 50 range of regarding to latency.
You're right.
So, okay. Well, that's very interesting. And you were talking before about that a company could set up its own network. I think it's called a campus network. And that seems to be very interesting, or it sounds very interesting. Who are the typical buyers for that? And how does that work?
So the typical buyer for that, of course, is an industry company. Yeah. So, but what we did is we elevated the market very closely, and so we found some segments. They really could benefit from a mobile private network based on 5G. So this could be, for example, the production industry, the logistic industry, the manufacturing industry. Those are the classical companies or airports or harbors, mines and stuff like that. They are running for private spectrum. There are other areas. They also want to benefit from the 5G capabilities, but more in terms of the capabilities, not in terms of having a private network. This could be, for example, a classical city network. If a city would like to run autonomous public buses to transport the people from A to B. Yeah? So coming back to your question, it's the classical industry. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there is a massive run on that. Yeah. And still Corona, unfortunately, has once again very clearly pointed out the gaps and necessities on that point. In general, all about digitalization. And what we found out is that Many companies they're running POCs or proof of concepts, yeah, POCs. Mm-hmm. They are running different small and tiny digitalization projects or ideas, but in general, the broad digitalization strategy for the company to feed the hunger and the requirements of the specific company is not really, really working well as we understand and what we have seen so far. Yeah. And with that, 5G offers now the companies the foundation for setting up the digital strategy across the entire company. Yeah. And the question might be also, how will this work? How will a company can come to its private network?
Yeah, how can I do that? I thought that this is always set up by some big telecommunication provider or something.
Yeah, so first of all, if we are talking about private networks, again, we have to decide between a mobile network operator, the MNO, which are typically companies like Vodafone, Telefonica, Group Deutsche Telekom. So companies who are providing mobile connectivity to public based on a licensed spectrum. On the other hand, if you're talking about private networks, we are absolutely isolated by saying you, as Marco Brüggelmeier, if you want, you can install your private 5G network in your house at home. You have the right for doing this, and you get protection from the regulatory authority that you can exclusively use that reserved spectrum for your own premise. So first of all, there is a huge protection behind it. And if we, but nevertheless, what you have to do to get your private network, you have to knock on the regulator's door to the Bundesnetzagentur and have to ask for your private spectrum. And to give you a feeling about that, because this is also a super positive thing, on a classical blueprint campus network, we estimate something around 50,000 square meters. And if you want to have the spectrum for this campus size, make a guess. How much do you have to pay for an exclusive 10-year use, Marco? Make a guess.
For the regulation, for the Bundesnetzagentur, okay, I would guess for probably several thousand or even 10,000 euros maybe.
Yeah, it's only 1,250 euros for a plant with 50,000 square meters where you can use exclusively a spectrum of 100 megahertz. I mean, that's nothing.
Wow. Yeah. That cheap? Okay.
It is that cheap. So first of all, make sure to get your spectrum because you have a right to get your spectrum. Yeah. So the other things are quite regular. There is no difference more or less when you compare it to LTE or Wi-Fi. So you for the planning, for the procurement, construction and operations of a campus network, there are a number of companies where these specific services can be contracted. Yeah. And in order to proceed the right things and allow me this, a consultation EG from my company should be used. Yeah.
Okay.
Overall, it can be observed that 5G campus networks are on the way to becoming as easy to operate as Wi-Fi networks. So no need to get nervous. It's at the end easier that maybe expected from the listeners out there. Don't get nervous. So it's not rocket science, you know, and all the new players on the market, they designed their product and solutions that it really becomes easy as Wi-Fi. Yeah. So you don't have to be a telecommunication expert with 30 years of experience. If you and your IT department in your company are able to handle a Wi-Fi network, you should be able to handle a 5G network as well. And this is the good news. Mm-hmm.
And can you say a word on in terms of the duration? So how long does it take to get my own network? Is it a process of several months or weeks or years? What is it?
I mean, you know, Marco, if we are talking about a big enterprise with several sites across the country or Europe or something else, you have to set up a much wider idea of digitalization. Yeah, to ask yourself how I integrate my different sites and stuff like that. But make it more easy. Just fall back on the 50,000 square meter approach. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's say, okay, we have one customer. We maybe have one hall,
mm-hmm.
With indoor and outdoor coverage. So, and if you run a fully procurement process, I think it should be able to reach the goal in a period of 9 months from the early beginning, from the idea until you can switch to integration.
All right. Thank you very much for that insight. So, what do you think? Because you are in a dedicated logistics and supply chain community here. Where do you see the most impact on logistics and supply chain?
Mm, good question. Let me summarize it like this. So with help of Compass Networks, and I had loads of conversation with logistics and intralogistic companies, they seek for real-time steering and monitoring or control solutions for the logistic processes in a hub or in a warehouse. And this can be set up and managed highly efficiently. So what people and companies are requesting is at the end a decentralized control of the processes and an autonomous execution and decision relevant information to have available at all times. So what does that mean? That means I take the example of Amazon during the Corona crisis. Yeah. Why made they such a good job? Because they were able to react very fast on the local needs. In country A were different to country B and so on. Yeah. And this flexibility and the time to market, this is breakthrough in my opinion. So I say, okay, we have a decentralized execution and control to autonomous feed the requirements from your customers. And another topic is that the combination of several use cases along the value chain leads also to a significant return on invest. So the required network technology for logistic companies depends on the number of integrated devices and services. And today, the classical use cases in logistics are what I have learned from this industry. First, it is the AGV. Yeah. So just for picking and stacking items. Second is the digital inventory. So classical warehouse management, receipt booking and stuff like that. Third is the enabled workforce. So maintenance apps, truck management. Fourth is smart operations. So real-time monitoring and machine control. And lastly, what I think there's a massive boom on that is the augmented and virtual reality assistance. So smart tools for instance, for installation and repairs. Yeah. So it is necessary at the end to define the midterm targets for a company in order to make the most efficient use of existing resources and competences in close coordination with the strategic directions. Focus on growth, focus on efficiency, focus on sustainability, and at the end, focus on quality. Yeah.
All right. You mentioned some good examples out of the logistics world, Stefan. And I assume that because we were talking before about 5G and the advantages of 5G and especially on the latency aspect, which was very interesting. And you mentioned AGVs and you mentioned AR glasses, for example. I assume that there the latency issue is very critical, and so 5G will bring a big leap on that. But does it always have to be 5G, or could I just start with LTE, or what is your opinion on that, or how do I decide what I need?
I love this question, Marco, because I went through a learning curve on this question as well with my company and my employees. When we defined and designed our homepage, we were talking on our homepage about mobile private networks, MPNs, just to make sure that we are neutral in terms of the technology, right? Because we said Most of the use cases today out in the field can be handled based on LTE. There is no need for 5G.
Yeah, like for the monitoring use case or something like that. Yeah, it's not about milliseconds there. Yeah, maybe minutes. Yeah, that's enough. Yeah.
Exactly. And you know, the point is, that didn't work because 5G is the buzzword. That's it, you know. So we changed everything to 5G, and now we have a huge customer base. But when we are in talks with our customers, yeah, then we recognize that per today, 2020, around 80% of the use cases can be built up and satisfied based on LTE technology. And by the way, you also are entitled and allowed to drive an LTE network under the same conditions as a 5G network. So you can also ask for your spectrum from the National Regulatory Authority. You also have the right, and it'll be exclusively. Yeah. So the idea, and based on a total cost of ownership perspective, leads to the point saying LTE, as we learned at the very first beginning of this podcast, is out in the field since 10 years almost. Yeah. That means we have loads of vendors offering technology on that point, and the price level is low. 5G, we have a few vendors, and the price level is quite high at the moment. So the idea behind this, if you are a consumer, an enterprise company, who can live based on your requirements with LTE, we recommend start with LTE and then do, at the right timing, the upgrade to 5G. And the good thing is, and this is really breakthrough information, the good thing is you don't have to substitute and get rid of the entire LTE network. You can do an upgrade on LTE. So the only thing what you have to do is upgrade the core area of your network. This is software. Mm-hmm. Update or install in between the so-called control and distribution unit, which is just a controller, an industrial PC where software is running on. And then add to your digital ecosystem, where we started with LTE, at this area's 5G, where it is necessary. And as you have a huge experience in producing cars, I want to give you a better understanding what I mean. Mm-hmm. Imagine if you have a production hall, which is entirely covered with LTE. And then we have this little area in the production hall in the line at the end where you have to fill up the latest software on the cars. Mm-hmm. You have round about 3 up to 5 minutes to install 30, 35 gigabits in 2 or 3 years from now. And for that, LTE is not sufficient. But 5G.
Yeah, but it would just take more time, yeah. So it's not sufficient for the process, yeah. So
time, okay. What you don't have because you want to fire out every minute a new car, right?
Yeah,
so,
right.
So the point is, Marco, only for this dedicated area of the production line, we can add 5G capabilities to feed the hunger of the data throughput. Mm-hmm. So we have a digital ecosystem, a mobile ecosystem, where we can start at a lower price level and then upgrade scalable to 5G where it is necessary. And if we and we did several TCO comparison saying, okay, on the one hand, we would like to start with Wi-Fi 6. Mm-hmm. Or let's say have a hybrid approach starting with LTE to 5G. What is the TCO advantage? And in every case I had under my control, we saw that the TCO for an LTE upgrade 5 to 5G case is much, much, much more attractive than Wi-Fi 6 with all the capabilities you also earn.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's really great news. So that means that coming back to the logistics use case, if I'm taking a look at all my monitoring use cases and tracking use cases and so on,
yeah,
everywhere where I don't need real latency or throughput, massive throughput, I could really live with a LTE campus network.
I would say so.
And only in those areas where I have the massive throughput, like for example, I have a fleet of AGVs running around. They are anyways no AGVs anymore. They are AMRs, so they are have some kind of autonomous driving in there. So they get along very well on the shop floor, but at some points I might want to do the software update for the AMRs, yeah, and only in this area I would install 5G. So did I get this right?
Absolutely. Okay. And also a good thing is if you have a whole logistic hall, let's say 10,000 square meters, you even have to bring 5G to the entire hall, right? Just define a little corner in this hall where you have 5G capabilities. And if you want to add new software on the AGV, you trust the AGV in this area and gets the data shower for the new software, and then the AGV is good to go with the new tool set. Yeah. So you can what I'm saying, Mark, is you can gamble around, yeah? And I want to invite the listeners, don't get nervous, yeah, saying, oh my God, I missed something around 5G.
Yeah.
That is not the case. Yeah.
Okay. But why would I do that, Stefan? Because I assume a lot of people, and I did so myself, I have to admit, they think, why should I do that, mess around with the old technology? I go on 5G right away. But I think it's a cost issue, right?
It is, absolutely.
So what is the ratio from the cost? Is there a rule of thumb there that you could give us?
It's a factor of 1.5.
Okay, so from LTE to 5G, factor 1.5, which is still good compared to all the upsides that are in the 10 to 100 fold range, but still, it's still a massive
and you know what?
Cost difference.
And you know what I told you before about the different release cycles around 5G, yeah? Mm-hmm. We expect, the industry expects, that we will reach a price level on 5G in 2025 on the same level what we have today on LTE. So from now in 4 years, let's say. I also told you that 5G started, but the standardization is not finished yet.
Mm-hmm.
So if there is no need for typical 5G capabilities, there is no need to go for 5G at the moment. Huh? So I think it's a good idea starting with LTE. The advantages comparing to Wi-Fi are good. Upgrade to 5G whenever it's necessary. And if you can wait 2, 3, 4 years, you get the full-blown package, so you have all the major standards on 5G done, and you have a price level which is comparable to the LTE price level what we have today.
All right. Let's jump a little bit into the future. Yeah, you know, I'm a big fan of all future technologies and so on. What is the next step? You mentioned already 6G. So I understood that it's not coming tomorrow or next year or something like that, yeah? Because there are cycles of around 7 to 10 years or so. But what is the next thing that is coming? And what do you think are the next big advantages that we will get there?
Yeah, so I already mentioned it before. So 5G today is happening in the so-called sub 6 gigahertz band. This is the area between 3.4 to 3.8 gigahertz. And we expect additional bandwidth in the so-called millimeter wave, which is in the area of 26 gigahertz. And this, not in 10 years, not in 5 years, already next year. Yeah. So, and this will lift the possibilities of 5G to another level, because the available bandwidth for industrial use cases will grow tremendously. Yeah. So we will have additional bandwidth where we can also exclusively use on the campus side. So this will be the first big move on 5G.
Is it again a jump of a tenfold increase or something like that? Or are there some physical limits to that? What can we expect?
As mobile technology is physics, there are always physical limits on that. Yeah. The more frequency you have, the higher data throughput you can reach. But the higher the frequency is, the less reach you can have. So it's also a question of where can I use the millimeter wave and where will I use the sub 6 gigahertz wave? But the good thing is that gives you a massive flexibility as well. I want to jump back on the example of the data shower for a car manufacturer. So if you have in your whole LTE network and you will have the last finish line where you have the software upload, where you have tremendous data throughput in less than 3 minutes, I say, let's go for this small, tiny, dedicated area for millimeter wave, yeah? Because this is absolutely sufficient and it's done. To answer your question, what is the ratio where 26 gigahertz is better than 3.7? I really have to come back to you on that. I don't have it in my mind at the moment. I'm sorry for that.
Okay, no problem.
Okay. Additional things with what will happen, I already mentioned, it is the further development of new capabilities on 5G. So we had release 15 in 2018 and release 16 in this year, 2020. So again, they were the standards for mobile broadband, reliability and low latency. So this is done more or less, yeah? And the next big thing is the massive machine type communication, which is embedded in the release 17. And this will be the breakthrough for the Internet of Things. So for industrial purposes, we call it the IoT. And what does that mean in particular? So it is also based on the structure of the architecture of a 5G network. So those devices, those sensors, for example, will work much more effective than they are doing today. So this saves battery massively because they don't have to ask every millisecond, hey, I'm still on life. Do you have a job for me or something like that?
Okay, yeah, that's interesting because battery lifetime is always something that logistics is interested in because you want to have long battery lifetime on your load carriers or whatever where you have a sensor on.
Yeah, and we can think it much wider, Marco. If I don't have to send a human to the sensor to change the battery on the huge plant, we are just saving FTE costs, right? So and if we are around and building up business cases and making total cost of ownership, TCO comparison, those are also the factors we will include in our calculation, say, where is a AGV use great and where not, yeah? So quite simple thing is you cannot imagine. I have one use case where a company is saying, okay, I have a problem. I don't know where my goods are. I know the container and the container number where the goods are in, but I don't know where this container really stands. So I am sending around people with cameras and pencils and papers and writing up the status on this topic. Can we imagine that in 2020? And there are 80 humans around doing this job. Yeah. If we can do this on an AGV by sight, you know, an AGV is transporting goods from A to B. Just install some cameras on it and get that information collected. You can save 50 people. And so the use case is quite simple at that point, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And I love the connection of the technologies that we will get there. Yeah. So connecting AGVs, connecting AR glasses and all. Yeah. All the possibilities are there. So great. Well, thank you very much for this glimpse into 5G and also the future possibilities that we have here. I think it was very helpful for us and for our audience. Thank you very much, Stefan.
It was really not my pleasure. And if you have any questions, just let me know. Yeah.
Yeah. We might, when this episode comes out, we might post a LinkedIn link for the episode. And if there are any questions now from the audience for Stefan, I think you might be able to answer them or willing to answer them.
Absolutely, or
as
just,
far as your time.
Or just visit us on our homepage, www.baifu.de, or send me an email. Happy to answer your questions. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye, Stefan.
Stay safe. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, that was our Logistics Tribe podcast deep dive into everything 5G and related technology. I hope you learned as much as I did today. If so, let other people know about this podcast. I promise that we have a long list of interesting guests and topics from the global world of logistics and supply chain coming up. Please subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss any of the future episodes. Next week, I will have Eric Johnson from the Journal of Commerce on the show to talk about his favorite logtech startups. Awesome episode. I hope you're tuning in. I'm Boris Felgendreher. Until next time.